Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Amy Barton.
And I'm Trace Kerr. And it's time for everything you never knew you wanted to know about a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So where are we going to start?
So we're going to start with etymology. So strap on your excited looks, everybody, because etymology, woo, I know, but I have a few good ones here. So jumbo, and jumbo turned out to be quite interesting because it is indeed, everybody thinks of the elephant, which was part of the Barnum Circus in 1880 was when Jumbo was in the circus. Uh-huh. And by age 7, he consumed 200 pounds of hay and 1 barrel of potatoes, 2 bushel of the oats, 15 loaves of bread, onions, pails of water every day. He was huge. 11 and a half feet tall, weighed 6.5 tons. So that word became the word that meant big. But his name, the word jumbo, hails from 2 Swahili words, one meaning jambo, which is hello, and jumb, or chief. Jumbo is actually hey chief.
Huh.
So that's fun. Would you like to do a little persiflaging? Persiflage is my name. That sounds terrible, doesn't it?
I don't know. I'm married. I'm not into that.
You probably are because you're married, because it's like back chat or like jesting and joshing and repartee.
I love that.
Yeah. So it is a French word. It's an 18th century French word. And per means thoroughly, and siffler is like to whistle, hiss, or boo. So you're a thorough booer or a hisser. It came from the Latin sibilare, which is the source of the word sibilant for S sounds.
Ah.
I know, things are really heating up in etymology land here, everybody.
Right?
Okay, my favorite one and the one I'm most excited about is pumpernickel. The word origin, I saw somebody post a Facebook thing about this and I had to look it up and see, but it's supposedly a Bavarian term for hard, and it's a really dense bread, or the bread itself is hard. So that's the boring version.
Uh-huh.
My favorite version is that in and High German, pumpern is a synonym for being flatulent. And nickel was a form of the name Nicholas, which was a commonly associated with a goblin or devil. So old Nick. So if you go with that translation, it means farting devil or devil's fart. And that brings me such great joy. Could you pick up a loaf of farting devil, please?
It's devil's fart bread.
Such delight.
I like pumpernickel. It's good for toast.
Pumpernickel with cheese spread or whatever.
Ooh, yummy. You know, yeah. So since you mentioned gastric effects, mm-hmm. I need to lean into my subject unless you have more words.
Oh, no. That was it. I'm excited.
Okay. So the most popular question that astronauts get asked by kids mm-hmm. is, how do you go to the bathroom in space?
It's a legit question because we all see them play with water and that yeah. raises some questions.
Yeah. And what are you going to do? I mean, there's almost no gravity at all in the space station. You're just floating around and that means everything floats around. Well, mm-hmm. there's a new toilet that was installed in the space station in 2020.
I'm super curious. My brain has all kinds of thoughts about suction and the awkwardness of that situation.
Yeah. So in September of 2020, the $23 million toilet system known as the Universal Waste Management System.
$23 million for a toilet?
Yep. And was installed in the International Space Station. It is 65% smaller and 40% lighter than the current toilet in use on the ISS.
That's a big efficiency.
Yes, it can support larger crews, so more people can be using it. And it's being tested by astronauts to, you know, see how it works in that low gravity situation. And also they've redesigned it in many ways because it's not just men that are flying on the International Space Station.
Indeed.
And the old designed toilets were really not thinking of
the logistical challenges.
Yes, when one is sitting down. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a more comfortable seat for the female crew. Honestly, it's a more comfortable seat for anybody who wants to sit down. Right. Mm-hmm. And it has a new fan that pulls the waste into the toilet.
I'm thinking of the urban legends about airplane toilets right now.
getting sucked out into space. Yeah. So it's got more suction, and then it's also improving upon an existing system to process and recycle the urine for reclaimed water. I'm hoping they're using it on plants that they're growing. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any other information about that. So fun fact about space toilets, astronauts train on two toilets, and this is like on the ground, on Earth. Mm-hmm. They have a positional trainer, which is a toilet with a camera inside it. Because the hole for this toilet is only about 4 inches. You know, can you think about the toilet? I know. Think about the toilet you have at home. This is a much smaller hole. And so there is a screen, like a TV screen, and an astronaut can see with the camera that's in the toilet, how am I backing up? How am I sitting down? Have I achieved correct seal? That's the practice toilet for positioning.
I had not thought of the indignities astronauts face.
Right. And then right next to it is a live toilet that they actually practice on and use. So even if you've been an astronaut and you've been to space, they still sometimes practice with the new live suctioning toilet on Earth.
Wow. You have to really know your crewmates so well by the end of those journeys.
It was funny. I watched the video and they were showing these toilets and there were three astronauts talking about them with the fellow who was filming the documentary. And he was like, so are you guys going to practice on that? And they're like, no, we don't need to do that right now.
We're willing to do a lot of things for the country, but that's not one of them.
This is where we draw the line. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Wow. Who knew? Ooh, do you want to talk about polar bears? Who doesn't, really, right?
I do, absolutely.
Did you know that polar bears are very nearly undetectable by infrared cameras?
Oh, they're that well insulated?
Yes, their hair has a hollow core, which effectively prevents those infrared emissions or that heat signature from escaping the fur. So it helps the bear retain its heat, it stays warm. And because of this efficient reflection of heat, the fur also maintains the same temperature as the air around it. So it's kind of, if you see pictures, which I will post, the bear is a dark purple with sometimes a little bit of orange, but you could mistake a lot of things for it. It wouldn't be really easy to find. So researchers from Zhejiang University in Japan have produced a biometric fiber, a textile that has those same basic thermal properties by using a freezing spinning method where they take a silk and water fiber solution. It's frozen as it's spun, and that creates ice crystals and forms a void in the middle when those ice crystals are gone. So the silk forms around those ice crystals and they've got a hollow fiber.
So what you're telling me is I am a person who is always very warm. And if I wore an outfit made out of that fabric, I would burst into flames.
You probably would. I completely think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all on that one.
Okay.
That's a very shorty short.
But you know, short is good.
What else do you have to dazzle us with tonight?
Okay, I'm going to dazzle you with the blue dragon nudibranch, a.k.a. the blue angel or the sea swallow.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. So nudibranchs are in the same family as snails and slugs, but you find them all over in lots of oceans, Atlantic, Pacific, Indian oceans. They are absolutely gorgeous. This particular one is kind of neon blue stripes on the top and gray on the bottom. And it looks like a feathery slug kind of going through the water. Like it has what look like little hands with lots of feathery fingers and little feet with little feathery fingers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, super cool. 3 centimeters long at most, so really, really small. Mm-hmm. It uses an air bubble in its stomach to stay afloat, but that's not what makes them cool. What makes them cool is that it eats the stinging tentacles of the Portuguese man of war.
That tiny little thing can eat those stinging tentacles?
Yes. So the Portuguese man of war or the Pacific man of war has stinging tentacles that can be like 6, 7, 8 feet long. It just kind of drifts along behind it. And they're super stingy, very toxic. I mean, they kill people accidentally. Like if you run into them and then they sting you and then you would just drown. So this little teeny tiny nudibranch eats the tentacles, nom, nom, nom. And then the stinging cells don't kill it. They migrate through their body into the skin on the tips of these feathery fingers that they have.
Oh, this is so Spider-Man.
Yes. And then if they're attacked or somebody tries to eat them, they just touch you with their stinging fingers.
Oh, and they're so cute and tiny.
Yeah. Didn't even see it coming.
Wow.
Yeah. So the symptoms that can appear for even humans are like nausea, pain, vomiting, all sorts of horrible things. So it's small. It's cute. It's also very deadly.
That's unexpected. I mean, usually like it just doesn't kill them and it's fine and they're okay. But the fact that they can then zap it back out is amazing and terrific.
Yeah. And the sting has even a bigger punch because it's more of these stinging cells in a more highly concentrated area.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like you should buy the smaller watermelon because it's going to be sweeter. But the opposite. Holy cow.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do these guys live? We don't have them up here, do we?
Oh, no, they're everywhere. Yeah. Ooh. Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian Oceans. So they're all over the place.
So tiny, cute little sea slug zaps you like the man of war?
Yeah, no touchy.
Okay, good to know. That is informative and helpful information. You do need to know that if you're in the ocean a lot.
This is true. Yeah. Yeah. For an adult human, if it's not too charged up, it probably wouldn't be awful, but just don't touch them.
I was cruising through old posts that I'd saved on Pinterest because they looked fun and was immediately struck by the Spanish festival. I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, you guys. I'm going to try. Elves and Fairy Knots. And it is a festival that takes place. It's called the Day of the Innocents. Let's go with the English version of that.
Oh, I like that.
The Day of the Innocents. It takes place on December 28th in Alicante, Spain. And it's been going on for about 200 years. But the festival origin goes all the way back to the story of King Herod, how during the time of baby Jesus ordered that all infant boys should be eliminated.
Oh.
So this is the fun Spanish festival that they're commemorating, but it is fun and festive now. And the way that enacts now is that the participants known as El Enfarinats dress in mock military attire and they stage a fake coup on that day. So they take over and they essentially become Herod for the day and they wear their uniforms and they are the flowered ones because the opposition, La Oposicio, the opposition fights back with flour and eggs. So if you are a flowered one in the streets, you might get flowered and egged. But part of the festival is that the flowered ones enact ridiculous laws and then they go around the city fining the opposition. And the fines are collected and donated to charitable causes within the village. So they've taken this festival and really made it a fun charity event. So they get to create ridiculous laws and then they go throughout the city. And if you are out and about as an opposition member and you violate a law, you might get to flower and egg them, but you also might have to pay a fine.
Oh.
Just know if you go to Spain and you are in Alicante on December 28th, you will be the opposition. So either stay inside or be prepared with your eggs and flour and some extra cash because you do get to be in the, and there's fireworks and smoke bombs and it seems like it's basically insanity. And I worry about aspiration pneumonia. I'm very worried about that for them. But they did not, any of the stories I read did not report that. It's a great fundraiser. It's very festive. It's a big messy cleanup the next day.
The mom in you is like, oh, please be careful.
Yes, I know. The dad in Paddington in the movies is an insurance risk assessor. And he is my favorite character because he knows the stats for everything and he is aware of the safety risks. If you are at the festival at 5 p.m., the town reunites and the mayor of the day gives his permission for the town to dance and signals the end of the craziness and egg and flour throwing.
What is it with America just hasn't gotten on? Like there's the tomato throwing festival.
Yeah. And the oranges.
Egg and flour throwing. There's orange. It's just like... Mm-hmm. We need to step up our game. Although Idaho, you don't need to start throwing potatoes, okay?
No, thank
you. We'll just draw the line. Yeah.
No.
Wow.
And they carve radishes. I feel like the Spanish really know how to be celebratory and
right?
festive.
We're not so good at that.
Or the people in like the Scottish with the fire, everything is fire.
I know.
We have too many rules here. I mean, the rules are probably good, but
it's not good. Yeah. Sometimes. Oh, so let's talk about another country that has some interesting rules.
Okay.
And a Norwegian couple renovating their kitchen. The house was built by the owner's great-grandfather in 1914, and they needed new insulation under the floor because, you know, was cold.
Yes.
Yeah. So they ripped up the floor and found in the dirt under the house a glass bead. They thought it was the tire for a toy car. And then when mm-hmm. they looked closer... They realized it was a dark blue glass bead and it seemed kind of old. So in Norway, there's a law that any site that has evidence of human activity prior to 1537 must be explored and preserved.
Oh, no.
So they called in an archaeologist and she looked under a pile of stones that was also under the house. They found an axe from the late Viking period, 950 to 1050 AD.
Oh boy, in their cellar.
Yeah.
Oh no.
So it's now thought that great granddad accidentally built the house on top of a grave site.
Wow.
The kitchen. Okay, so this was talked about in like mid-2020. So mm-hmm. the kitchen was going to be excavated by archaeologists at the University of Tromsø. I think they might still be excavating it. I don't know if they're done excavating it, but it would make me very cautious to do anything.
Yes, I would not ask questions. I'd be like, we can build a new floor over this old floor.
Oh,
no, we don't need all this headroom. Do not open up that floor. We do not want to know what's underneath. Oh my goodness. Can you imagine your kitchen being under construction with people coming in and out for... There's actually a show, it's a British show called Ghosts, and this couple inherits an old home and their basement is a historical site. So part of the show has the crew that is excavating, the archaeologists are just in and out. They're just part of the family for a long time. They just pop in and out and they're just in the basement.
They're like, hey... You wouldn't believe what we found today.
Yeah, it looks like the plague was its plague victims.
Oh no.
Yeah. So
Do you have other stuff?
Do you want to talk about rain on other planets?
Yeah.
Because I do. I posted on Facebook actually a little chart of showing if you were on another planet, this is what the rain would be. And it was things like one of them is diamonds, like it rains diamonds on Saturn. And I'm like, that sounds terrific. And it is for a little while. In other places, it rains liquid helium on Mars, plasma rain on Jupiter. But the Saturn diamonds are actually a super cool phenomenon. The only bummer is we don't have a way to verify this right now because we are not getting to Saturn just at the moment. But theoretically, what happens is Saturn's atmosphere, and to a lesser degree, like Neptune and Jupiter could also have this effect happening. They have like 10 lightning strikes a second, which causes the methane molecules to break up in the atmosphere and leave carbon atoms just free floating out there, and they start falling. So as they fall, they turn into graphite and travel through the layers of the atmosphere and eventually get pressurized into tiny diamond pieces, which sounds super great. But about 22,000 miles in, it gets really hot and liquefies the diamonds. Cool.
So it makes a diamond.
Yep. And then it kills it. But I'd rather be in that mid zone on Jupiter and Saturn because Venus is the sulfuric acid rain and it's hot. Apparently, it's like the planet surface is like 894 degrees.
Wear your sunscreen.
Yeah, you could go over to Titan, which is Saturn's largest moon. It's cold there and they're getting methane rainstorms.
Ooh, would it mm-hmm. smell like farts?
I think so, but I don't know. So, and apparently the rain fills up lakes and the lakes evaporate back up. So it stinks going down and back up. And wait, but is methane the one that's odorless and we make it stinky? Or which one is that?
Oh, yeah. You know, actually, you might be right there. Methane smell.
So you're just going to, it's not compatible with.
Oh, it is odorless. My mistake. It's hydrogen sulfide that stinks.
So you're going to die a sneaky death. So that's not a good choice for us either.
Yeah, no, that's not so good.
Yeah. So I think that rain, earth, water, rain, suddenly it doesn't seem so bad. Like dry ice rain, like it sting you every time it touched you. Tss, tss, tss.
Yes, yeah, and then it would be evaporating and you wouldn't be able to breathe. So
that would also be bad. That'd be worse than the little stings.
Kind of a drag. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So hooray for earth rain. Things you didn't know to be grateful for. Now you are.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's talk about frogs.
I love to talk about frogs.
I've been on such a frog kick lately. So I want to tell you about the auditory trick of the pug-nosed tree frog.
Pug-nosed tree frog? Is it cute?
It is cute. It just has kind of like a little snub frog face. Like maybe it ran into a window.
Sweet.
And you'd think that in mating season, you'd want to sing your song, you know, the males as they're croaking, all by yourself to let a female frog know where you are. Like, yes. You know, hey, baby, come check me out.
Improve your odds.
Yeah. There's a drawback to that, though, because when you're singing, you're vulnerable to predators like blood-sucking midges and bats.
Okay, that's a good point.
You know, so you're standing out there and you're like, hey, baby, and a bat picks you off. That's kind of not great. What's a frog to do? Well, the pug-nosed tree frogs, all the males kind of sing together at the same time. One frog leads and then all the others call at nearly the same time. So it's kind of like this auditory camouflage. But the thing is that when that's happening and they're all calling like croaky, 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 and it's all at the same time, it sounds to a predator like it's coming from the same location. Unfortunately for this frog that starts the chorus, it sounds like it's coming from that frog.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so why in the heck would any frog call first? And they do this weird thing. It'll be a long, quiet pause. And then in that war of attraction, this behavioral ecologist at Purdue University, Zamina Bernal, she said that the frogs, all of a sudden, one will be like, okay, fine, I'm just going to do it. Croak, croak, croak. And then they all kind of jump on and all start croaking at the same time.
That big risk, big rewards, hopefully. The most beautiful lady frog or the most bold lady frog goes. I don't know.
Well, okay. So this was the thing. What they were studying was, do the female frogs have an attraction for that like first frog in a way mm-hmm. that they don't for the following frogs? And they found out that the female frogs aren't duped by the simultaneous calls.
Really?
They don't pick a particular frog out of the bunch. The first frog does not win the game.
Oh, big risk and not very big reward. Wow, this is the one that volunteers himself for the volcano. He just has a strong sense of social. Wow. Yeah.
Well, they kind of rotate through, you know, who goes. It's just the frog, I guess the least patient frog.
The frog one with who impulse control problems.
Is the frog most likely to croak first, and then everybody else joins in, and hopefully fewer of them get picked off. Yeah.
Wow. Another thing to be grateful for, that's now how it works for us, because some of us who have just some slight impulse control problems survive here in spite of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy who can't resist walking up going, hey, baby, at the bar, he's more likely to get picked off. And yeah.
Or like the kid that can't say no to the first marshmallow and wait for the second marshmallow. I see you, that kid. I'm that kid sometimes. That frog, odds aren't great.
No, they're not so great. Mm-mm.
It is interesting how a whole species, how those things come to be, that's how it's done. And that one frog protects everyone else.
Yes.
It's like ants. Ants do that kind of thing in different ways. They're willing to sacrifice themselves for the society.
Although their thought with the frog is that it's not that he's thinking of the group. He's just like really excited and he can't shut up.
Oh, the ladies. Woo!
Ah! Oh, wait. So do you have anything else you'd like to share?
I could make something up.
Well, I have one more. So
Okay. Let
me share with you. This is like the last little bit here. The diabolical ironclad beetle.
I feel like I've heard of this guy before and I'm excited to hear about it because...
I mean, the name alone right there, you know, it's like, oh, you did well. You're not a pug-nosed frog. No, you are the diabolical ironclad beetle. This little beetle...
That's actually his name? That wasn't just your creative embellishment?
No. That's its actual name.
That beetle wins.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's an inch long And it, if you, well, I'll have a show note, but it's dark black and kind of with nubbly shell. It looks like the economy Humvee style. It is not, it is not a Lamborghini. It is a little nubbly bug. And
awesome.
Most beetles live less than a month. The diabolical ironclad beetle lives for about 8 years.
Oh my goodness. What?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's like a person living over 1,000 years.
Wow.
Okay. And not only that, but the University of California Irvine engineer David Casalius and his team were like, this bug is super tough. How tough is it? They ran over one with a Toyota Camry twice.
Wow.
It can take pressure up to 39,000 times its own body weight. Just to put that in perspective, a 200-pound man, you know, a big football player-y kind of guy.
Yep.
That's 7,008,000 pounds of pressure he can take.
Oh, my goodness.
So you could drop 300 school buses on this guy all at once, and he would be just fine, like the ironclad beetle.
Oh, my goodness. That's like, he must have all sorts of, like, stretchiness or flexiness. I don't know. And inside is just a big sack of goo?
Yeah, well, the shell, and yes, it's exactly it. So that flat shell that they have that's all nubbly, it's rounded and it has layers of proteins that shift around the shell before breaking. So instead of being like a regular beetle shell where you think of it as being like almost like an eggshell, one hard thing,
yeah.
This is almost like plates of proteins. And so that's why when you run over it with a car,
it just flexes.
Just fine.
Wow. So if you have an infestation of those in your home, you just have to move. Burn it down.
Well, I mean, they're only going to be there for 8 years.
Yes! 8 years! And they're going to have babies all those 8 years.
Yeah, they are.
Wow. Where do these fellas live?
You know what? As you were, I was telling you this, I knew you were going to ask me that. Yep. Diabolical.
Although I'm 44 and I haven't encountered one yet that I'm aware of.
Ironclad beetle. Let's see. It is found in the deserts of Western North America where it lives on fungi growing under tree bark.
Deserts like out in Eastern Washington. We're sort of arid, but not totally desert. So,
well, Western North America. So I guess we need to get out there with the Subaru and see what happens.
Yeah. Run over some beetles. It's like the cockroach in Wally. That suffers so much in that movie and springs right back. So maybe it's like that.
Yep, there you go. It's like, no, I'm good. Still
I'm
good.
Okay. I'm still here, buddy. That's an optimistic note to leave it on.
Yeah, I think so. I'm so glad we did another one of these grab bags. I really enjoy just the random, quick, facty. So good. Yes. And those of you who reach out to us and say, I miss the long episodes. Currently, this is 36 minutes long. We'll see what it is when I'm done.
Yes, this one's for you all. That's excellent. We need an outro, don't we?
We do need an outro.
You guys know where to find us, right? Twitter, at My Brain Junk. Facebook, Instagram, Brain Junk Podcast. BrainJunkPodcast.com. BrainJunkPodcast@gmail.com. I don't check the Gmail. Don't email us.
No, I check it. I check it all the time.
You want me to take a crack at that the traditional way?
Do you want to just wind it up with that last sentence?
All right. Trace and I will catch you next time. I don't know how to do intros or outros. Trace and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. And I guarantee you will not be bored.